on those things. And if he was found guilty, I have to also believe then that a jury of military officers would take into account the 5 years in as a prisoner of war, his 5 years being tortured nonstop, use that in some way to alleviate any sentence that may be passed on him if he was found guilty or is found guilty.
Well, and we will, of course, follow this court-martial and the trial as it continues. Again, we've been speaking with Matthew Ho. He is a State Department whistleblower, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, also previously directed the Afghanistan Study Group, collection of foreign and public policy experts and professionals advocating for change in U.S. policy in Afghanistan. Matthew, thank you for joining us on KBOO.
Thank you for having me on.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 4th Annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd to April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theatre. 4 nights of entertainment, including outsider music legend Artist the Spoon Man, 9 traveling circus troupes, acrobats and aerialists, clowns and cabaret, bands and burlesque, drag and daring do, and more. Again, that's the 4th Annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd through April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theatre, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. Susan Griffin is an internationally celebrated writer who will speak on the false divisions our culture makes between body and soul, masculine and feminine, self and other, that allow us to hide from our own knowledge. Again, that's Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Out Loud here on KBOO, your queer news and culture radio zine for the Portland metro area and beyond Southwest Washington and throughout Oregon. Thanks for being here, listeners. You can find us on Facebook, KBOO Out Loud, and find out what we're doing every week on the show. We're here every Tuesday evening from 6 to 7, and some lists of events in the city that catch our eye. Tonight, we're going to talk later with Jesse Paradox, local musician and consciousness raiser and spiritual seeker. Right now in the studio, I have with me Jonah Mossberg. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You are touring with a film called Out Here.
Yeah, I am. It's a one-hour documentary film project about queer farmers in the U.S. started working on it in 2009, so it's been quite a long project in the making, and mm-hmm. I've been touring the West Coast with the movie doing screenings, and I'm in week six of 6 weeks of touring and traveling and preparing for a screening here in Portland tomorrow.
Well, welcome. So tell us where the screening is.
Right. So the screening is tomorrow evening, Thursday, April 2nd, at the Academy Theater, which is on Southeast Stark Street. And yeah, 7 p.m., and it's a $5 to $10 sliding scale. And it's also in partnership with a local organization here called Friends of Family Farmers. And they do advocacy work for farmers across the state. And they've just been absolutely wonderful to work with.
That's great. So just to clarify, listeners, that's Thursday at the Academy, not tomorrow.
Oh, today is, I am totally traveling and not knowing what day it is. You're so right. Thank you.
You're welcome. So is this your first film?
Indeed. Yeah, this is totally my first film project, first time working with video cameras and doing editing. It was a very independent, DIY, low-budget film project. And I certainly had a lot of help from friends who were in the know about film and editing. But I definitely learned a lot of things on the fly and made a lot of beginner errors as well as you could imagine.
And what made you decide to make this film out here?
So I'm a queer farmer, and I'm 29 now, and I've been working on farms since I was 18. And around that time, when I started working on farms, was the same time that I was coming out as queer and trans. And I just found farming to be one of the first places where I felt like I could not have to break myself down into my component parts, where I could really sort of bring, where I could really just feel comfortable in who I was. And it was one of the first places where I felt affirmed and strong and good in my body, and like I had found a place to do meaningful work. So I've had largely really amazing positive experiences as a queer person working in farming, which is a field which is mostly straight. And I... So around 2008, I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area, and around there's a lot of queer farmers and gardeners, and we had a little group of urban farmers and gardeners that would get together, and we called ourselves the Rainbow Chart Alliance, and we would have little potlucks and seed swaps and stuff. It was really a nice way to sort of commune with each other. And there's a conference in that part of California, not far from the Bay Area, every year. It's called the Eco Farm Conference, or Ecological Farming Association Conference. And it's a, you know, sustainable farming conference for the region. A lot of people go to that conference. And there's all different sort of mixers that happen sort of after hours, sort of like identity-based, like young farmers, women farmers, I don't know, fruit and nut growers, or, you know, whatever. And we wanted to have a queer farmer mixer, our little Rainbow Chart Alliance crew. And we actually came up against a lot of pushback from the organizers of the conference around wanting to have that sort of queer farmer mixer. And I just sort of wondered why that was, and what you would think would be a more progressive farming community and conference. So really just sort of, that was sort of the impetus, got me thinking a lot about what it means to be queer and to be working in agriculture. And I just really wanted to know what people were doing and how people were connecting to one another, especially out in rural places. And so that's sort of part of why, I started to work on the project.
Let's take a look at the word queer. For you, what's in there? What fits in there? What does queer include? What does it involve?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, anything outside of, that's the thing about queer, is it's such a difficult word to define. And for people who come to see the screening, you'll see that the movie actually opens with a sort of series of, or montage of queer farmers all attempting to define the word queer, and the answers that come up are all pretty different, I think. I mean, for me, it's just an umbrella term that sort of fits anything that's outside of the heteronormative society in terms of gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, a strange question, but it could be interesting. How do you define farming?
Right, and this is also something that comes up in the movie too, where there's another sort of short segment where you see farmers also trying to come up with their definitions of farming. But I mean, for me, I think it's being a producer of something, you know, vegetables or fruit or animals, or I mean, you can also raise. You hear one farmer talking about farming butterfly. So there's lots of different ways that farms and farming can look like, and I think that's definitely something that I discovered through my project. You know, that in sort of keeping with the and sort of seeing farming as a reflection of queerness, and that there's a lot of different ways that being queer can look like and can be embodied. I think farming similarly, there's a not necessarily one correct way to ever do it. So I don't know. I actually don't know how to define farms and farming.
It's pretty interesting to take a look at rural queers and their lives. Something that's gets lost a lot. You know, I think we have some stereotypes about what that would be. But they're only stereotypes.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I mean, I'm somebody who comes from a rural place. I've spent time living and farming in the city, and I've gone back to living in a rural community. I live in rural northeastern Connecticut, where I'm from, and I farm there. And it's mixed. It's mixed, my experience being an out queer trans person in a rural place. I have great farming community. And I've come to be totally out and accepted by my straight farming friends that I work with. But honestly, for me, it's not necessarily something that comes up a ton. Like if I'm at the feed store and I need to get feed and I run into a farmer friend, we're not necessarily talking about gender or sexuality. We're talking about what's the best price on the feed or whatever. So sort of connecting more around those sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, I think in rural areas, farms are traditionally places where queers have felt that they had to leave and go to cities to find sort of vibrant queer culture and community. But I have discovered through my research that there actually are several different sort of pockets of really interesting, vibrant queer communities happening in rural areas. There's one in central Tennessee. There's a pretty amazing queer community of rural folks happening in southern Oregon. So, yeah, it's really interesting to me what's happening in rural places and spaces with queer folks.
There was a hint in the film of the gentrification of rural farming. Do you have a sense that that was something that was coming up in the interviews and videos that you were doing?
Will you say more about what you're trying to ask? I'm not exactly sure what you're getting at.
Sure. So I think one of the people look at gentrification as an economic process, but I think it's also a cultural one. People are attracted to a lifestyle or an environment, and if they can afford to purchase it, essentially, they can inhabit it. They can also change it. My question, I think, is do you have some sense that there's a perhaps a back to the land movement that poses a threat to the culture of farming as it is now? It seemed like there was a hint of this in one of the interviews in the film, but that's all just a hint.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say that I think that we need to encourage more people, queer or not, to be producers of food. Mm-hmm. I think we can't have enough small scale farmers in this country. So whatever it takes to get people to do that and to do it in a way that's sort of working in tandem with nature, I'm a huge proponent of that, and I want to see more of that. I think you're sort of touching on like an access piece and who has access to land and what does that look like? And sure, if you can, you know, if you have come from some sort of wealth and you can go out and buy a farm and start being a farmer, then, you know, that's just one scenario. I've seen queer people working in sort of all different kinds of alternative arrangements. You could think of leasing land or borrowing land or trading for land or, I don't know, there's a lot of different ways that people have access to land. And I think as queer people, we make our families in different ways than straight folks. And that means that often, you know, when thinking about it within an agricultural context, that land is also, you know, land tends to be handed down in different ways or not. Handed down if queer folks come from farming families but then choose to leave them, or if they, you know, somehow acquire a piece of land and then don't have children, because we reproduce in different and more in creative ways than straight folks. So what does that look like? But I think that also, I don't know. What I've seen is there's a lot of queer farmers who are working on small scale sustainable farms, and I don't think that that's a coincidence. I think that that's because small-scale sustainable agriculture is an inherently friendly and logical place where we can sort of practice our queer values, which usually are, you know, diverging from the authoritarian capitalist models of work and relationship. And so I think that's a place that queer people want to be. That's where I want to be. Mm-hmm.
If you're just tuning in, listeners, we're talking with Jonna Mossberg, creator of a film, a documentary called Out Here, Queer Farming in America, that is showing Thursday evening at the Academy Theater. Your film shows a lot of different situations, rural and urban, also a lot of different kinds of folks, which was great to see. It's great to see farming taking root not just in the countryside but also in the cities. I mean, that's an amazing thing, and it's another place where the way we use our land and the way that it changes in cities can affect who can grow and where. Sometimes land becomes more available as cities, let's say, empty out. Other cities become more crowded and land starts to disappear, which is a big concern right here in Portland. In our Northeast, where I've lived for a couple of decades, the farming plots, and some of them communally operated, disappearing, community gardens disappearing. If they're not fully locked in with land ownership, they'll be gone. You know, the land is just too precious and sought after now. But that said, there's an increasingly vibrant urban farming system, I guess, because it requires networks. And it's been great to see, not only in your film, but in other sources that I've been reading or movies I've seen, that there are Black, Latino, Asian farmers working in the cities. So these are folks who are really committed to their communities, and farming is where their contribution is. You know, bringing food and the ability to participate in growing food, which I think is something that many of us don't get a chance to do.
Yeah, I think farming in the city, to me, it's a really, it's a queer engagement, I think, in the if you think about it from the perspective of doing something where you're not really expected to do it. And yeah, I mean, I was actually just talking to my friends who I'm staying with here in town, and they were saying that some of the community gardens here in Portland actually have a couple year wait list just to get a little plot. So how sad and how amazing, mm-hmm. That so many people are sort of wanting to get their fingers in the dirt here.
It'll be interesting to see maybe Portland, a queer city, in its own right will be able to develop a queer farming network. That would be an interesting thing to see. I don't think we know yet where Portland's queer community is headed. We have a lot of affinity groups more and more all the time. It's been a real change since, you know, when I got here 20 some years ago. And it felt like you could know every homosexual in the town if you wanted to. Those days are long gone. So I hope that, folks listening will start to think about what queer farming could look like in your lives and head out to the film on Thursday evening. Let's talk a little bit about the diversity of farmers and how queer folks and other folks are crumpling up and throwing away the stereotype of what a farmer is or what a farmer should be doing.
Yeah, it was a big priority for my project to include a wide sort of spectrum of different kinds of queer farmers. So we have somebody in the film who's a goat farmer who's from the fairy community and is disabled. We have a couple black farmers talking about their experience being queer folks working in agriculture. We have, you know, some lesbian rural farmers who have a kid. So there's a lot going on in the movie, and yeah, I think if you know, something that's been really beautiful for me and to sort of bring things back full circle is that I get to show this movie in all different kinds of places now, including farming conferences, sort of like the Eco Farm conference I was mentioning earlier, where we sort of came up against a lot of backlash, but you know, just difficulty and just like gathering in there. And so now I get to take this movie to sort of straight, you know, mostly straight farming conferences and really challenge people's ideas about, you know, who farmers are and what they're supposed to look like. So yeah, that's been a really amazing gift, part of the project. And I went to over 30 farms when I was in production of the movie. And of course, since making the film, I have collected so many more contacts now of people across the country. I recently got some amazing contacts of some queer migrant Latino farm workers in the Central Valley of California. So just to give an example of what some other, you know, queer farmers who they are. And so this is just one film about queer farmers, and I hope that I don't know if it's going to be me, but I hope that there are, you know, some other folks take interest in the topic and that it continues to be explored. Because another part of why I decided to make this movie is because there's a very little historical documentation about queer farmers. When I, you know, back in 2008 when I started to do research on the topic, very little came to the surface. There's, you know, a couple books, a couple publications, no films like this, like out here that I know of. So, it was definitely another part of the project, was just to really create some strong visibility for the community.
In your interviews while making this film, have concerns about mentoring in farming come up for queer folks? Since I think, you know, often these are folks who are deliberately seeking out farming rather than inheriting a family farm. So the process of learning to farm for an adult who doesn't have experience, let's say, it's a challenge. It takes time. And it takes work. It takes a different kind of work. Was that a concern that came up for folks about how to get started farming?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I heard some of the queer farmers who are actually in the film, who I interviewed down in Alabama, talking about how important mentorship was from their older farming neighbors, who would come over and help them learn how to fix tractors and use bulldozers. And they had a pastor in town who would come out to their farm, and he kept bees on the farm and would help them, you know, teach them how to tend the bees. So yeah, I think mentorship is extremely important. And also there's no one route, you know. I think farming is something that is, it is, and connecting with plants and growing plants, I think it is intuitive in a lot of us. And there's definitely so many lessons to be learned from people who know how to do things. But, you know, I think there's always new ways to invent processes and systems on farms. And I think that's why, part of why, you know, queers are so drawn to it. It's because as queers, we've had to sort of, you know, queer culture has developed a creative resiliency in order to survive and thrive. And as a farmer, you get to be, you wear a lot of different hats. You get to be a plumber and a mechanic, and you have to do the bookkeeping, and you have to know how to grow food or raise animals. So, yeah, I mean, I think these are all part of what makes us adept agrarians as queer folks.
Just one more time before we come to the end of our discussion. Let's remind folks where and when.
Okay, so the screening is on Thursday, April 2nd at the Academy Theater, and that's on Southeast Stark Street. It's at 7 p.m. and it's sponsored with the Friends of Family Farmers organization run out of Portland. And it's sliding scale, $5 to $10. Nobody turned away for lack of funds. And yeah, you can find out more information about my movie project on the web at outheremovie.com. There's also a Facebook page if you do that, Queer Farmer Film Project. And I'm ending a tour, so I'm doing this screening on Thursday. And then Saturday I'll be up in Olympia, and then Sunday I'll be doing my last screening of my tour in Seattle.
One of the things the person in your film said that she does, which that she's engaged in, is feeding people body and mind, which is just a lovely thought, and one that just sort of goes on and on and on. You can spend a lot of time with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a lot of the farmers that I talk to, and I believe this too, is that, and I think sort of what she's trying to say is that, you know, farming is not just growing food, but it's really a practice in relationships and transformation and growing something bigger than ourselves. So, yeah, it's absolutely so beautiful how she puts that.
She also said that plants and the land, seeds, chickens, they don't ask if you're gay.
Right. Yeah, I love that.
There was an amazing sense of joy throughout the film, which was really great to experience. There were also folks raising their families on farms or creating their families on farms, communal farming, folks engaged in child rearing. So that was great to see.
Yeah, and like I said before, it was really important for the project to show a lot of different kinds of farmers and different sorts of situations who come from different backgrounds who have different identities. And I think we really were able to achieve that. And also I think it was important for the movie to sort of, like you were saying, to provide a hopeful, uplifting picture of what it means to be a queer farmer in this country. And I think a lot of folks are feeling really inspired to, you know, whether it's in the city or out in rural areas, but to get into farming after watching the movie. So that's been really exciting for me.
And certainly there's no downside to knowing where your food comes from. And if at all possible, knowing who was involved in making it happen.
Absolutely.
That's, you know, one of the reasons the farmers markets are so great, not only for accessibility, but also to be able to rub shoulders with folks who are actually growing food, which can be tough to do if you're living in a city.
Right, though I hear that there are farmers markets 7 days a week here during the season.
I think so, yeah.
How amazing.
Yeah. Although that does mean, you know, you have to travel around if you really need something on a particular day. But we also have plenty of CSAs and yada yada. So,
right.
You know, we have our own you know, we have our own scene going on, I guess. And there's some in the film. There's some. There's a little bit of mystery. There's some folks who live in a, they farm together, and then they live in some sort of communal space. But they don't want to say where it is, which I thought was
right.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, that was just because that particular land project you're talking about. You know, they have many residents who live there, and some of them were just a little concerned about privacy and having the name out there. So it was actually a little tricky for the editing because people would be, you know, referring to that sort of land project, and then I'd have to cut it out and whatever. But yeah, so yeah, that's definitely, you know, understandable. They're living in the Deep South and, you know, wanting to maintain the privacy and integrity of their community. So as a filmmaker, that was a no-brainer for me to respect that.
Indeed, indeed. So, Out Here, Queer Farming in America. It's a great film, folks. It is showing Thursday. What time?
Yeah, so it's Thursday at 7 p.m.
It's $5 to $10 sliding scale.
Right.
Is that right?
Yep, and it's co-sponsored by the Friends of Family Farmers. And I also have one more sponsor, which is the Naomi's Organic Farm Supply Store, which is Farm Supply Store, which is here in Portland, and it's a queer-run farming business for the, you know, service for the community. You can go there and get your supplies and things you might need.
Wonderful. So that's Out Here, Queer Farming in America, Thursday evening at the Academy Theater in Southeast.
Yep, in Southeast Stark Street.
All right. And we've been chatting with Jonah Mossberg, who is the creator of this film. Thank you so much, Jonah.
Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome. We'll be back with musician and thinker Jesse Paradox after a little bit of music.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Out Loud, dear listeners. Thanks for being with us. You can find us on Facebook, KBOO Out Loud. We also archive our programs at KBOO.fm. You can also stream. If you're listening on the radio now and you're headed home and you just want to flip on your computer, you can stream KBOO right now or any time of the day. We have with us Jesse Paradox, local musician, thinker, and radio host.
A lot of things. A lot of things together. Yeah. That's true.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be part of the show and, you know, be invited on here.
It's our pleasure. So, Jesse, tell us a little bit about what you are working on in town.
Well, primarily, I'm a musician, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of like a one-man band. I play a bunch of different instruments, and I have the technology that allows me to do them all at once when I do performances. So I play rock. I guess it's kind of like indie pop rock. I have my guitar, drums, harmonica sometimes. And so, yeah, I originally started performing in California. I came to the realization that this is what I want to do. Music is what I want to do, professionally, which is not an easy thing to come to and actually do, you know. But I've been doing it, and I've been playing around venues around Portland, farmers markets, and now I'm trying to seek out more, not so much venues, but places like nonprofit places that are queer focused and things like that, because my music is largely focused on the queer experience, individual positive transformation and spirituality and stuff like that, and kind of inspire and motivate, I guess, music with meaning, because a lot of music I hear is just kind of like cars, sex, I don't know, like music with meaning, but that's good music too. That's my primary, what I call my, it's my job, it's my career, it's my dream, is music. So I'm on that road, and I guess, you know, I talk about my message being positive queer spirituality and positive, the, you know, kind of inspiring one to live authentically, and that kind of message. I also just started, I'm really excited about this, I just started hosting a show, a radio show, through Wild Planet Radio.
Hoorah. Which,
yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited, and it's called Trans Spirit, and it's about transgender spirituality, which, it's like, I've always had these ideas that there's a lot of positivity to the transgender experience, to the queer experience in general. But, you know, a lot of times these are experiences that are associated with just with suffering and negativity, and for good reason. I mean, you know, if the world is largely against us as transgender people to be out in the world, even in a place like Portland, can be dangerous, and there is a lot of suffering and negativity. But so I want to try to focus on the positive aspects and celebrate that experience and say, we came with a purpose. And what is that purpose? What is that purpose to you? What is that purpose to you? And asking different people. And so, you know, my music, I've been a musician my entire life, but as far as professionally, I've been starting, I guess, throughout the past year to 2 years. Now this radio show is new too. So it's like my life, I'm finally in my life doing the things that really matter to me. And they definitely go together. The themes and the messages go together. You know, putting out that positive message, I guess, for people to listen and say, yeah, this isn't all bad. I'm not just a mistake. You know, there's wisdom and, you know, gifts that I have to offer, I guess.
So for folks who aren't familiar with Wild Planet Radio just yet, you should check it out. It's Portland's new queer radio station. They're still just online, but very soon they'll be on the air 12 hours a day right next to KBOO on the dial. They'll be at 91.1. And they just, I believe, inaugurated a new studio just down the street. Is that right?
Yes. I don't think that they've moved quite yet. Gotcha. It's still in the works, but I think it's near here, actually. Okay. I don't remember what the address is, to be honest.
So folks can come up with a show concept, pitch it to Wild Planet, and hopefully become a radio host or DJ. And so that's what you've done.
That's what I did. I mean, originally, I was interviewed on Wild Planet Radio, the online portion, I guess, because there are many episodes of different shows that are online that just haven't gone to radio waves yet. But I was interviewed by Bolivia Carmichael and Bobby about my music, and I played some songs. And I've just been wanting to get more involved. I love radio. As a little kid, I made my own radio stations about cats or whatever using cassette tapes. And so I actually bugged them. I was interviewed, and then I think it was several months later, I asked them, because I knew that it was a volunteer venture and that it was things were just getting going and everything. And so I wrote them. I'm like, you know, do you need any help? Do you need it? You know, trying to get my foot in the door. And basically, Bobby, you know, I don't know if they were just looking for volunteers or they liked our interaction that we had, but he's like, well, how would you like to host a show? And I was like, yes. And I don't know, you know, I was eager, and he's like, well, you know, develop an outline and everything. And the whole idea that I had for the show was already in me. I mean, the topic of transgender spirituality and all that that encompasses, because it's not a specific definition, it's intentionally vague, that was already in me. I developed a class, a workshop that I had done back in California, because I moved here from California a year ago. And so that's been my passion, my passion theme, I guess, for a little while now. At the time, I did, I think, a workshop, and I developed a class. But in trying to pitch the class to the universities at the time that I was going to, it just didn't end up working out. So I never got to really do the class, even though I did a workshop on it. And so I've still been holding all this stuff in me about transgender spirituality and the kind of stuff I'm talking about, wanting to do something with it. And so I wasn't even thinking necessarily radio show when he said that. It was like, oh, this would be great, you know, a queer-focused radio show with, you know, that's going to be talking, there's going to be news, there's going to be interviews of all sorts of people on this radio station. What about my little piece that I feel needs to be added to this, to the discussion on queerness in general, is, you know, the positivity and the spirituality. And I guess I'm kind of mixing up my terms. I mean, the show is specifically on transgender spirituality, but I suppose I also talk about a wider umbrella of queer spirituality as well, but language, you know, just...
What do you find yourself exploring when you talk about spirituality in terms of transgender experience or queer experience?
Well, I have to sort of start out with explaining where I'm coming from with my own sense of spirituality, because it's such an individual topic. By saying the words transgender spirituality, I'm not implying that there's one kind of transgender spirituality. For instance, there have been different cultures in different times and different places in the world and history that have revered either people who were queer, gay, and then also people who were transgender and gender nonconforming. And there's sort of a loose history of this. And then there's also how I feel where I'm coming from now, which is a mix of Eastern spirituality, some Buddhism, Hinduism, a lot of New Age thrown in there, some paganism, some sort of adapted shamanism. So I have to just right up front say that, because that's the lens that I'm looking through, you know, my personal sense of spirituality. What I'd like to do, like in my music, for instance, a lot of my own spirituality is coming through. I'm singing about my ideas of the world and what spirituality means, what souls are, what consciousness is, how we are all interconnected, that kind of stuff. That's just my own private spirituality. In terms of the show, what I'd really like to do, I mean, I've talked about my own sense of spirituality, but I really want to interview other people. There's one episode out of four so far that I've interviewed my first person, and I want to interview trans people of all different kinds and ask them what spirituality means to them.
If folks are interested in being part of a series of interviews like that, where can they get a hold of you to set that up?
That's a really good question. I guess I point people to, if you go to my website, www.jessieparadox.com, there's a contact link. If you go to that contact link, you can just send an email.
Okay. That's jessieparadox.com, and that's J-E-S-S-E.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. So that is, I'm sorry, what is the name of the program on Wild Planet?
It's called Trans Spirit. Okay. So two words, Trans Spirit.
And now it's still just being aired online, but soon to be a live radio program. Is that right?
Yes. I'm not sure what the actual launch date for the radio. It'll be 99.1 FM.
Oh, I always get that wrong. 99.1.
Yeah, because I had to repeat it a lot. KPQR, 99.1 FM.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah. I got my guitar here.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's see how I'll position this thing. That's the tricky part. All right. Well, one of the songs that I imagine that I'd play in bringing my guitar is called Frontier, and so it's kind of, I call it my genderqueer anthem, because it's sort of speaks to the message of what is our purpose Now, this is specifically more as genderqueer, but it could be for anybody, I suppose. So, am I seated in the right place? All right.
I signed. It was simply a sign to mythology of the mind, an answer you won't find. But if you don't comply, the hateful might decide that you and your kind must live a lie. But if you decide to survive, not give up and die, you will find it's an important time for you. Ask why you are here, too queer, tested by fear. But in human evolution, you are the frontier. Angels of a new beyond the woman and the man. So what's your worth? What purpose do we serve? Well, I gave birth in reverse, back to the first universe, before the genders of the earth tenderly birth. But now I play the nurse, so the two opposites can converse. And I will rehearse this curse until our true selves emerge. Until our true selves emerge. Paving the way for a new generation to say, our consciousness is the next phase. Our consciousness is the next phase. Our consciousness is the next phase.
Thank you. That was Frontier.
Wonderful. One of the things I liked about that piece of music is it reminds me of something. One of the most important things anybody ever said to me was to stop me and tell me that I'm needed. And I think people don't hear that often enough. I think we get a lot of different kinds of praise for the work we do, but that was something that was special. And I heard some of that in Frontier. If folks want to hear more of your music, where can they wander to do that?
Well, my website is www.jessieparadox.com. I do have shows coming up.
Yeah, let's hear about those.
The thing is, I should just say, if you once again go to www.jessieparadox.com and click on the show link, I've made it pretty easy. I'm not the best coder in the world or anything like that, but I try to make it as easy as possible. You know, just go to shows and there'll be a list. Because there are a couple of different events coming up, like the April 30th Partnership Project Dining Out Day. I don't know if you know about that. It's for funding for people living with HIV and all throughout Portland, I guess. There are different restaurants that participate in dining out, and it's something like some percentage of your bill goes to Partnership Project. Well, I'm going to be performing. Partnership Project itself, the nonprofit, is going to be having a gathering at a restaurant. The thing is that the specific time, it's going to be April 30th, but the specific time has yet to be determined. So that's why I say if you go to jessieparadox.com and then shows, because I'm also going to be playing at Pivot downtown for Pride.
Oh, wonderful.
Once again, yeah, I'm really excited about that. Once again, time to be determined.
Sure, of course.
Because it's in June, you know. And and then I'll be playing at the Farmers Market the King Neighborhood Farmers Market, July 12th at 10 a.m., if you can get up that early. I think it's Northeast 7th and Wygant, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, it's in the it's in the parking lot, although this is far out. So
yeah, it's pretty far out. That's why I say, like, if you, if you're interested, I also, if you go to the contact tab, I have a mailing list that, that you can join. And, you know, I keep everybody updated. Every time there's a new show and there's new info, I put that into pretty much all of my info.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the Interiority Project?
Well, that was basically, I mean, I guess it's still kind of going, but that was a couple of years ago, I decided to start basically sort of like an informal social network where people, I guess anywhere around the world, but it started with me and my friends, would share articles, resources, information, even things that we wrote, to academic articles, to popular science, on the nature of consciousness. This has been something that I've always been interested in terms of, like, what is the mind? What is consciousness? What are thoughts? That kind of thing. For those who don't necessarily just subscribe to it is simply neural firing, that there is something else going on. And so this is basically a network of people. It's not necessarily like a place or anything like that, but a network of people who talk about this. And so it's kind of like a, maybe a, there's not like a public place you can kind of go, I guess. It's sort of a, you know, conversation that's been happening.
Where do you think consciousness arises from?
Oh my goodness.
Well, let me put,
I did my graduate thesis on this.
Let me reframe that. Yeah. Do you think that's that question itself is connected to your sense of spirituality? Or do you feel like
definitely. Because consciousness, it's almost like consciousness for me is related to, I guess, relationship and the interconnectedness of things. If you just look at the physical world, we're all separate. We all, you know, we're all kind of like balls bumping into one another. Consciousness is, I feel like, something that we're all kind of tuned into. So once again, it's like I have to kind of stop myself because I don't know how to go, you know, I could go on for an hour. But in terms of spiritually, I guess, for me, spirituality is, a big part of spirituality for me is interconnectedness. So, you know, in me considering consciousness almost like arising out of relationships among things. I'm getting pretty abstract.
That's okay. Listen, we only have a little bit of time left, but yeah. I want to ask you about the Kinky Show.
Yeah, I think it's the Kinky Show. www.thekinkyshow, I think it's .tv. It might not be .com. It might not be TV. That's the only thing you can go to. But basically, the Kinky Show is a, it's an online TV show, if that makes sense. I mean, it's set up like a TV show with myself and an old colleague, Jack, talking about the BDSM scene, kinky sexuality, BDSM meaning S&M, whips and chains, that kind of thing. The point of the show, though, is talking about the philosophy, the history, the spirituality, all that about kink, because I guess in the same vein as what I'm talking about the transgender experience, there's so much negativity around BDSM. A lot of people, all they know about BDSM is in Law and Order, someone dies because they choke their partner to death, or, you know, like there's just lots of misconceptions. I think it was in the DSM as a sickness and all this stuff. And so the show is about, I guess, what are the deeper positive aspects of it, and what do people get out of it, and how is it meaningful? How is it positive? I mean, very much like my transgender show, actually, just sort of a different focus. But it's online, several episodes. I think it's thekikishow.tv. Yeah.
Are there still episodes to come?
No.
It's a retired project.
I mean, it's a retired project. I've since moved. I've changed my focus and stuff like that. And so...
But Fox can
still
up.
But, oh, it's definitely still up. It's something I feel very passionate about. And, yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful. We have been talking with Jesse Paradox. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Jesse,
so much fun.
You're welcome. Jesse is a singer-songwriter, music, and much more at jesseparadox.com. And that's J-E-S-S-E. I failed to mention earlier, the music at the break was The Downside of Gentrification by new Italo superstar Johnny Jewel and Mike Simonetti. Italians Do It Better is the record label, Chromatics, Glass Candy, and much more. They're all, it's all great stuff. Sometimes depressing, though. And Jesse's also host of Trans Spirit on Wild Planet Radio. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio. Find us on Facebook, KBOO Out Loud, and we'll be back next week.